is Dorothy Fawn, also known as Lily Mon, Flower Cannon, and you're listening to the Two Dads in a Podcast.
What's up, guys, and welcome to the
new 2021
to the new year.
Yeah. New year, new look podcast.
That's right. We're gonna call it changing things.
We're off
up
to a great
bit.
Start. Like 2021's been kind of quiet so far.
Anyway, we're planning on changing up the podcast a little bit. We're gonna do something a little new, a little fresh. We're essentially gonna be splitting the two major segments that we've been doing.
You're gonna get a podcast on Tuesday and then one on Thursday.
Yeah, double the dads, double the podcast.
I mean, it's supposed to be double the fun, I think.
Oh.
Something about gum.
Oh, that's copywritten, I think.
Yeah, well.
Not that that's ever stopped us before.
Yeah, not going to stop me. What's up?
So you're going to get our top five segment, and then you're going to get a Two Dads Topics. We're getting rid of the news altogether because that shit's just depressing.
So speaking of news.
No,
seriously. There's a good one. HBO Max is going to revamp the Batman animated series. We're going to get new episodes.
Okay.
So they're bringing back all the stuff we want to see.
Okay.
Thank you, HBO Max.
Yeah. Well, over this last week, Felix here challenged me with top five swords.
Yep. I love me some swords. Like, guns are cool. Action like that's awesome. But a good ass sword fight just tops it all. And I don't know what it is about it. It's not like it's more primitive. It's sort of equal in its, but it's more personal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's got that touch. So we're going to do top five blades this week. It's going to be live action.
Live
swords.
Action. So TV shows, movies, as
real
long
life.
As live action.
Like real
life.
Fucking life.
Yeah.
Like there's some cool ones.
And then next week we're going to do animated and video games, because there are way too many to blend them both into a single topic.
Right, that would
be way
been hard.
Too many.
I mean, this one was already pretty difficult.
Yeah, it was.
But I'll go ahead and jump off. My number five is the Sword of Gryffindor.
Sword of Gryffindor. Ooh, that's a good one. I like that.
So yeah, it's not seen so often in the movies.
No,
but
I mean, what, two, three times?
A couple of scenes, yeah. Harry pulls it out of
the hat. And then it was used in the woods when he finds the sorting hat in the bottom of that icy area.
It's been dropped off a few times. But
and
it's,
then Neville
I mean,
used
altogether,
it.
Yeah, used altogether, it, yeah. It's just a cool-looking sword. I mean, it's got that really classy silver hilt with the red... I guess sort of ruby looking.
Yeah,
handle
it's got a little bit of
bottom.
Gold touch and trim in there too.
Yeah, so that one, like it looks cool. It has a significance, even though it's not as prevalent as a lot of the other swords we're probably going to cover. So, what's your number five?
My number five is the Megazord Power Sword from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. I had to have this one in here, man. It was such a large part of our childhood, you know,
and a really big sword.
Yeah, it was wielded by the Dino Megazord, so like the first Megazord, and it was used to use the super ultimate move, which was, you know, originally called the Megazord Power Slash. And
very original.
Honestly, the scenes where it popped in, you know, it would fall down and stab into the ground, or every so often the Megazord would actually just straight up catch it, and
yeah.
The sky would turn red and this lightning would come down and absorb it, and then it flings an energy slash and makes things explode. I mean, it's all right,
it was,
I guess.
Cool. And like Power Rangers, the show itself got me in so much trouble as a kid and almost got banned in my household.
Oh, 100%.
Because of all the flips and kicks, and man, it was just.
Everybody wanted to be a Power Ranger, man. I had a great uncle. His name is Billy. And he was the Blue Power Ranger. We were convinced growing up that he was the Blue Power Ranger because his name was Billy.
So my number four is just so entrenched in mythology itself, and that would be Excalibur.
Excalibur!
So this it has so many different sort of theories, but obviously it's the sword of King Arthur, it's
you King know Arthur it's of great the Round Britain, Table,
writing at its finest. You know, you get Merlin and all that fucking shit.
Oh man, Merlin was like
was a sword in the stone magician, was a brilliant movie when we were
yes,
little.
But that's animated, so we need to talk about the live action stuff here.
True.
Which there were like what 25, 30 different movies, and then there's the various TV shows and
oh, and various movies of movies, just like Disney movies.
Oh yeah,
live action. Well, what was it? Knights of the Round Table. The kid in King Arthur's court.
Yeah. Oh man, I love
plays
that.
Plays baseball.
Yeah, he plays baseball, and then he gets like launched into Camelot, and
right.
You know, it's nuts. There's been so many adaptations of the story of King Arthur and Excalibur that it's been around for centuries, hundreds of years since I want to say one of the earliest times that it was written about was like the year 1100 or something like that.
But you think, like, as far as me, you, any other nerd that I know that loves D&D, that loves the RPG video games and the shows and the movies, their obsession started with this sword and this tale. Like,
oh, 100%.
The Knights of the Round Table, King Arthur, the Sword in the Stone, that's some of the earliest nerd memories of my childhood.
Well, and you've got the sword, and it's told so many different ways, and there's so many different adaptations and interpretations of it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it has magic powers, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's literally just a sword stuck in the stone.
It's just never ending. It's a never ending tale.
Well, I mean, when you have something that's been around for literally over 800 years, and the story has lasted that long,
yeah,
it literally has to be in this list. It has to be. So
what's your number four, sir?
My number four is Riptide from Percy Jackson. So
glad it made your list.
While the movie doesn't really exist, just don't go and look it up. take my word for it. They are making a Disney Plus adaptation of
the
Percy Jackson series, and it has me super hyped. And I'm really excited to see what they do with this sword. It's so cool. I've read every Percy Jackson book multiple times. Because they're easy reads and they're fun. You know, you just want something to kind of get lost in, and, you know, the Greek mythology. Rick Riordan does such a good job on his homework on getting things as accurate as possible while adding this new modern twist.
You know what? Anytime that somebody can write a story within a story that's already known and make enough variations to create something just brilliantly its own, I love those type of works.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the weapons that he does, and especially Riptide, because of course that's our focus today, you know, he has such a unique take on them. Riptide, originally in the series, was owned by Zoe Nightshade. She was the daughter of two gods, and she was originally, I want to say she was a nymph, and it was her hair clip. And when she took it out of her hair, it became this celestial bronze sword. And it was given to Hercules to help him fight. And, you know, eventually it kind of went to different people and eventually fell in the hands of Percy Jackson.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way the sword is described and everything is sweet. You know, celestial bronze cannot hurt humans. It'll just pass right through them. And it's magical in the sense it's a pin. You take the pen cap off, and it turns into the sword. You put the cap back on, and it turns back into a ballpoint pen. And if it's ever lost, it'll just show back up in his pocket. You know, it takes some time, but, like, dude, how awesome would it be to have a weapon that you could never lose? You know how many ballpoint pens I've lost in my life?
Man, all the time. All the time. All day, every day.
So what's your number three, my friend?
My number three is one straight out of our childhood. 1999, it's Darth Maul's dual lightsaber.
So
this
why does this happen every single week?
Can
you guess what my number three is?
It's
Darth Maul's saber staff.
I did not have that. I did not have that. Wow.
Every single week, man. Every week.
Number three, man. I love it. So the new series couldn't just be a repeat of the first three. Now, the series that just came out did great repeating a lot of the same themes and making it fresh. But the next series that came out couldn't be a repeat. It could not. that would have been probably embarrassing to George Lucas if he'd have just had to roll out the same stories. So he had to make enough variations, and that didn't just mean with plot, characters, and development. It also meant with the weapons.
And the weapons first and the character added, design, for man, sure.
The first thing he added were these striking characters. Think of Darth Maul himself with spikes coming out of his head. And then he pushes the lightsaber and one end comes out. And then the other one comes out.
Oh, man.
Like, so Jesus Christ.
I almost took this one off here and replaced it with something else, only because it is technically a staff, but at the same time, it's cut in half by Obi-Wan, and he uses it as a single-sided lightsaber for quite some time in the Clone Wars. So it works. It's technically a sword in that sense. And the
I
design,
kept it in because it still said saber. So I was
that's
like,
fair. That's fair.
That does it.
Well, and the lore behind the two-sided saber staff or the dual-sided lightsaber is kind of unique too, because if you go back into like the lore of Darth Maul's, especially, he built it himself based on blueprints that he found from Darth Sidious or Emperor Palpatine, and so it's an ancient design that just he decided to build his own based off of these ancient blueprints, which makes it even more badass.
And you know, we've talked about Darth Maul in the past and how I don't need to see more of the same characters I see all the time, but one thing I really wanted to see in live action was the past of Darth Maul, his planet, and there's so much mystery and lore behind that planet. And
well,
it's
who
not,
knows? We might get to see more of it with the Acolytes? Because that follows Palpatine, isn't it?
Well, I haven't read much about it yet.
But I think the Acolyte or the Acolytes, I forget if it has it's plural or not, but I think that follows more of the dark side and Palpatine based on some stuff
I'd
that
like
I've
to
seen.
See that.
So it's possible we might get to see more because Darth Maul literally just showed up out of fucking nowhere.
But I mean,
in the most badass way possible.
This lightsaber set a precedence, it set a bar, one that all the video games have been trying to achieve ever since. It opened up this new world of lightsaber, the thought of lightsaber customization, which was never prevalent until that
before
movie.
Before this, you had red, blue, green. That's it.
Green. And
in the books and the extended.
And then even like Mace Windu having the
colors.
Purple lightsaber.
Happened in the same series. So that happened in the same time. So now,
and then you get to the video games, you can have yellow ones, you can have these forest green ones.
Well, now you've got light blue, dark blue,
purple,
yellow, orange, even white.
Yeah.
And you know, there's so much variation now, and I absolutely love it. I absolutely love it, and I can't wait to see more.
And then like that set of precedents for when the new trilogy came out. What were they going to do then? And that gave you an awesome lightsaber with Kylo Ren.
Yeah. You know, as much as people hate on the new trilogy, the character designs, and especially, like you just said, the lightsabers and everything that they kind of show off, they did a really good job. Because I loved that, you know, the lightsaber. And I don't think they ever discussed what the lightsaber was actually made of, the hilt, but I'm pretty positive it's got to be Beskar, because that's one of the only metals that can withstand being hit by a lightsaber. But, you know, you have that hilt and you had the two little sides that came out, and it kind of had the more traditional sword-like design. But
it worked and it was cool, man.
Maul's is the one that started all of this variation. So that's why it had to be number three.
So my number two is the Green Destiny. And this is from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon movies.
Oh, yes.
One of the best movies made and one of the greatest kung fu movies.
Featured
beautiful a young
movie.
Chow Yun-fat.
Beautiful movie.
It's great. No matter what language you listen to, you know what's happening. You catch the feelings. There's not much lore written behind this sword, but it is a gorgeous looking sword.
Well, I mean, the only thing you know about Green Destiny is that it enhances the powers if it's in the powers of the wielder, if it's in the hand of a master.
Right.
So that's the only thing we know about it, really.
One of the things you get with a lot of the other swords is the history of it, previous owners, stuff like that. And it's not here. but it's brilliant nonetheless. So what's your number two, sir?
My number two is the legendary sword Excalibur.
Hey, I know that one.
Yeah. You know, it,
so we were thinking along the same lines.
For all the same reasons that we discussed earlier, you know, for just to kind of reiterate, for something that's been around this long, if it didn't make either one of our lists, there's something wrong with us as nerds.
Exactly. You know?
Although, it's too good. And
the thing that's kind of, well, you know, I'll talk about it after the whole thing.
Let's
get through this.
So what is your number one then?
My number one, and this is a bit of recency bias, I will admit, although the style has captivated me since the video games, Knights of the Old Republic, and now it's a more prevalent style today with the Mandalorian, and that is the Darksaber.
The Darksaber. See, that was the one I almost replaced Maul's saber staff with. And
I'll talk about it later, but I didn't want to do two Star Wars sabers, but this one has such a cool backstory.
Dude, the history behind it, and we don't want to go too in-depth because we don't want to spoil some of the new Mandalorian, some of that stuff.
But we can go into the past. It's already well established in the animated series on Disney Plus.
Oh man.
Before that, Netflix held it. Before that, it was on
Darksaber. Yeah. Yeah. It has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
A long time.
But so the first, there's only been, I think, one Mandalorian in history to get welcomed to the Jedi Order, and that's Tar Vizsla.
Yes.
And he created a one-of-a-kind unique lightsaber, which looks like a freaking samurai sword.
It looks like
sword.
A sword. It looks like an actual sword. It's the only one that does. And it's black with a white glow around it. Like,
yeah.
How badass is that?
So this has such a lore behind it, where the only way for somebody else to get it, acquire it, is by defeating the previous owner in battle, or if like it has done originally, it was being passed along generation to generation as one passed, the other got.
Yep.
And so this thing has been around for so long. It is heavily involved in the stories before the Empire and during the Empire. And now even after, like, could be after the Empire, because it's still showing up.
Yes.
That's how important this sword has been.
I have a feeling, in no major spoilers, because, you know, if you follow The Mandalorian at all, you know the Darksaber at least shows up in the new show. I have a feeling it's going to hold a bigger part of the new seasons coming up than what you would think.
It almost has that Excalibur feeling in the Jedi world, where just this mythological sword.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I can't wait to see where it's going, and I'm glad that they passed it along. And this sword gave a lot of design to, like, the vibroblades and vibro swords of the Old Republic series.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't done enough digging to know if it's been delved upon at all, but why they look so fucking similar.
Well, and you know, we talk about the first Mandalorian Jedi Knight. Vizsla used this to fight against our number three, Darth Maul. Like, it's been around. And
I don't know if that was the great grandson or whatever Vizsla. It was far down the Vizsla line.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It wasn't the original Vizsla.
Darth Maul defeated him, and Darth Maul actually owned the Darksaber for 18 years, I think.
He took it and used it and dual wielded his half and the Darksaber, and at one point he used it to fight against Darth Sidious.
Yeah, and that's actually why it topped the dual saber for me. That's the reason why it had to go above it. But the sword it beat out, I will talk about after you tell your number one.
So my number one, I thought about it for a while, and, you know, like Felix here, I didn't want to put two from the same lore into this list, and I almost did, but I stuck to my guns, you know, because I have I have morals.
If you say what I think you're going to say, that was going to be my number one.
It might be. It might be. But this was a tough choice. There were four that I was looking at that I knew what lore I wanted to take the number one spot, but I didn't know which sword as much. So I literally sat there for a half hour thinking about...
You fucking say Sting, I'm going to slap you.
You know, it was like over a half hour. I literally went back and forth through the wiki pages and the designs and everything. And I ended up falling to and giving the number one spot to Glamdring.
No, not the one I had.
Yeah, you probably had Andril.
Yeah, it was Andril.
Yeah. So the
why?
Reason...
Because I just watched the Two Towers last night and it was in my head.
So the reason I picked Glamdring and the four I was looking at, Sting was one of them because it held such a prominent role throughout the series. But
it's very prevalent.
So
and what's the orc sword?
Orcrist
called again.
You had Orcrist, yeah. That was wielded by Thorin
Legolas
Oakenshield.
For a bit. Yeah, and Thorin. Those two are the only ones I remember, but I'm sure there were more before that and after.
And Sting and then Andoril. And the reason yeah. I didn't pick Andoril.
Because it's not undercover.
Glamdring. No. Is because Glamdring has, you know, Andoril was new. It was Narsil reforged. You know, it was the sword that was broken, the Flame of the West, all those different nicknames and stuff. But it was too new. Where, you know, yes, it had the pieces from Narsil, and that was the sword that, you know, took the ring off of Sauron's hand, and that's fine. But Glamdring has been around for over 6,000, probably 7,000 years.
Yeah.
Owned by, originally, the King of Gondolin, which was an ancient, first age ancient, elvish city, and it was lost. And Gandalf, of all people, find it in a troll cave. Along with
right, the
Orcrist
same one
Sting and
was Sting. Found.
Yeah, yeah, Sting and Orcrist were found in there. And, you know, even then, you know, the goblins, when he slayed the great goblin,
yep.
He knew it as Foehammer. That right. This sword had such lore and such ancient history behind it that goblins and orcs feared simply the sight of it. You know, by orcs, it was called Beater. By the right. Goblins, it was called Foehammer. And of course, Glamdring is its official name. And I absolutely love that. This is the Lord of the Rings version of Excalibur, in my opinion. Yeah. You know?
Well, you know, the reason that Andoril was so much more in the front of my head, not just because of the movies, because, I mean, you see all the swords in the movies, but that one, for what it did, it's like, man... I'm trying to think of a comparison that's probably more easily understood, but this was the rock star, you know. Andoril was the rock star.
Yeah,
of
I mean,
it all
it's essentially what gave Aragorn his claim to the throne even more so yeah. than his lineage. And
that's the only reason it's more prevalent. I mean, it's like thinking, you know, Rolling Stones had the longer body of work, but the Beatles were the rock stars, you know? Which do you prefer? That's really just your flavor.
Yeah. I also do like the design a little bit more of Glamdring, where Andoril is a straight blade all the way down. I want to say it's a one-handed longsword based on it, where Glamdring is a hand and a half. So
yeah, the thing I like about Andoril the best is just that hilt is so simple but so strikingly powerful looking, you know?
Yeah. So, but I like the little bit of curvature, that elvish style given to Glamdring,
oh, yeah.
where it has that slight curve and the yeah. curved hilt and the wrist, the hand guard. So it was really, really tough because,
yeah.
you know, as you know, and as many people who listen in know, that we are huge Lord of the Rings fans, and it was really hard to pick. But there we go, guys. Two Dads, top five swords.
New Look podcast. Hello.
Yeah. So
look out.
Woo.
Here we are.
As always, guys.
Same beanie, same headphones, same glasses, new look.
That's right. That's right. I don't have a headband on this week.
Hey,
so
that's why it's so bright. New look,
yeah. That's is there a ghost in my office? Is that just me?
So you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on SoundCloud. You can listen to the interview series on YouTube, and you can find the podcast everywhere podcasts are available.
Please
you
can make also sure
email us.
Yeah,
at 2dap2020@gmail.com. Rate and review.
Like, follow, subscribe. If you would like to support us, we do have our Patreon open where you get full access to the extended, unedited interviews with all of our interview series guests.
There is always at least an extra 20 to 30 minutes of content.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
And guys, always remember to listen responsibly.
Absolutely.
We love you, every single one of you.
Except you.
You know which one you are, fucking asshole.